Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. From Project Censored, some news stories that should have been reported but weren't. And from me, some news stories that should have been censored but weren't. Plus, an update on the great toilet paper shortage of 1973. I hope you'll stay tuned. It's been a while since we looked at the corporate news media. In the fall, Project Censored came out with their list of the top 25 censored news stories of the year, and we'll take a look at it in a few minutes. The so-called spring semester has started up at the college where I do a little teaching. That means I can get the New York Times free on weekdays. If I can survive the 20-degree Fahrenheit spring weather while I walk to the Times' vending machine in the student union. It's a promotional thing, the free paper. I have to insert my ID card to get a copy. So the Times company now knows me by name, rank, and serial number, and probably knows my salary, birth date, credit rating, all the books I've checked out of the library, and the details of the illicit love affairs I've been secretly having with the dean's wife and that red-haired meter maid over in Torrington. I know what you're thinking. I didn't know they still had meter maids. What can I say? Change comes slowly in Connecticut. Anyway, the New York Times is an interesting counterpart to my other daily rag, which formerly went by the name of the Manchester Journal-Enquirer, but is now just the Journal-Enquirer of no fixed address. The Times is the better newspaper, but I can see that they're both largely propaganda organs, both dedicated to getting citizens to support every move that the ruling elite makes to further its own purposes, at the expense of the best interests of the 99% of us. The difference between the two papers is the difference between Barack Obama and George W. Bush. One is more intelligent, more suave, with much better manners and finesse. But they're both ably serving their masters, who are Wall Street, the Fortune 500, the 1%. With Bush, it's easier to see through the surface to the scam underneath. But with both of them, it's the same scam. Newspapers are kind of the same. In a minor provincial newspaper, you can see the stage machinery creaking away more easily. Here's a new corporate ploy I've noticed, a ploy in which the news media are conniving. If you're a corporation that sells consumer products, you announce that there might be a tragic shortage of your product. AP will then turn your corporate press release into a big news story, and all the provincial papers and all the TV news programs will get your message out. I assume that sales of the products then shoot up. There is a shortage. Buy it while you can. Have you ever noticed all these stories recently? January 10, 2014. Kraft confirms that there is indeed a Velveeta shortage. This could spell disaster for Super Bowl viewers. Tyson's chicken is probably cursing Kraft Foods. This is just a guess, but I'll bet that Tyson's was just about to announce a chicken wing shortage, which could spell disaster for Super Bowl viewers. Kraft beat them to the punch. You think a chicken wing shortage is just too preposterous to believe? Well, how about the alleged Butterball turkey shortage of November 2013? This was in my local paper, too. Butterball turkey shortage might ruin your Thanksgiving, said the Huffington Post. Maybe they intended a dash of irony there. Maybe not. It's hard to tell with the Huff Post. ABC News ran the story on November 19. They said, quote, "Just in time for the biggest turkey day of the year, Butterball has announced a bird shortage. Last week, Butterball informed supermarkets across the country of a shortage of fresh turkeys that weigh in at 16 or more pounds. The company is cutting all orders by 50% to meet the demand as best it can," unquote. Now, if you are in a supermarket the next day, and you see they have 20 rare valuable butterball turkeys, don't you get the urge to snap one up before somebody else could take it? The whole story was mostly BS, of course. That didn't stop the corporate media from playing it up. Even ABC News acknowledged that Butterball had plenty of fresh turkeys under 16 pounds, had plenty of frozen turkeys of all weights, and acknowledged that plenty of turkeys of all weights were available from all the other brands. But Butterball brand got all the free publicity, and now you got a motive for buying a Butterball, because your newspaper and local TV station played up this non-story that obviously originated in Butterball's marketing department. Then in December, I saw another scary article in the paper. There might be a shortage of sriracha sauce. A new California health law will delay shipping of the latest batches of Hoi Fong Foods spicy sauce. Now, I don't know how many quarts of sriracha sauce per capita your community consumes, but I think it's safe to say that in Hartford County, Connecticut, if all the sriracha sauce disappeared overnight, only 700 people would even notice, and they could all easily use original-style Cholula sauce instead, and thereby help out the economy of Mexico, our friendly neighbor to the south. But there, in the Journal Inquirer, was a big article warning of a possible impending shortage of genuine Hoi Fong brand sriracha sauce. So, in 3 months, we've had extensive press coverage of Butterball Gate, Sriracha Gate, and now, most recently, Velveeta Gate. Here's my fearless prediction. In late February, a few weeks before midterm exams, I'm going to open up the paper and find a big headline on page 3. Papermate warns of red pen shortage. Educators alarmed. If that doesn't drive up Papermate sales 8%, I don't know what will. If you are old enough, you probably remember the great toilet paper shortage of 1973. There was an oil shortage then, caused by an embargo by several Arab oil-producing nations. That's another news story that the press covered very extensively, but not well. 1973. In December, Tonight Show host Johnny Carson announced that, because of the oil shortage, there was now a toilet paper shortage. This was a joke. But the rumor spread quickly, and lots of people started panic buying toilet paper and hoarding toilet paper. And this caused a real toilet paper shortage that lasted for weeks. The stores were sold out. I remember that, though I wasn't personally inconvenienced. Back then, people began to wonder if the toilet paper shortage would lead to a Sears catalog shortage. If you don't get the connection, ask your grandfather. Anyway, I remember the great toilet paper shortage of 1973. And you can bet that Butterball, Hoi Fong, and Kraft Foods remember it too. Personally, I don't use red ink when I mark student papers. I don't like Butterball turkeys. I can live without sriracha sauce. I haven't eaten Velveeta since I discovered cheese. And I've never watched the Super Bowl and don't intend to start now. I do like toilet paper, though. As Anita Bryant might have said, a bathroom without toilet paper is like a day without sunshine. Look for it in the paper goods section of your friendly neighborhood supermarket. And speaking of toilet humor, here's another item about Johnny Carson, this from Wikipedia. Carson successfully sued a manufacturer of portable toilets. They wanted to call their product, Here's Johnny.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Thank you. Thank you. That's very nice of you.
But I digress. Let us turn to the important news stories of roughly the past year that the corporate-controlled news media didn't want you to worry your pretty little head about. Every fall, Project Censored issues a volume that tells many of these stories that the New York Times ignores or underplays, and that our local rags definitely ignore. Project Censored's website summarizes 25 of these stories, and I will select a few and condense them a bit. Here's one of them. Number 13. A fifth of Americans go hungry. An August 2012 Gallup poll showed that 18.2% of Americans lacked sufficient money for needed food at least once over the previous year. To make matters worse, the worst drought in half a century impacted 80% of agricultural lands in the country, increasing food prices. Despite this, both houses of Congress included large cuts to the food stamp program in the current Farm Bill, which has not yet been passed. Proposed Senate cuts would deprive approximately 500,000 households of $90 a month in nutritional assistance. Proposed cuts in the House of Representatives would go much further and would remove at least 1.8 million people from the food assistance program. Sidebar comment, yet both the House and Senate bills called for large increases in the billions of dollars of subsidies given to the big corporations that produce corn, cotton, sugar, and a very few other crops. Congress plans to take food away from the increasingly many hungry children and give the money saved to Cargill and Archer Daniels Midland. And that includes the Democratic-controlled Senate as well as the Republican-controlled House. Okay, while we're on the subject of agribusiness, here's another of Project Censored's top 25 censored stories. Number 21, Monsanto and India's suicide economy. Monsanto has a long history of contamination and cover-up. In India, another Monsanto cover-up is ongoing. Since 1995, nearly 300,000 Indian farmers have committed suicide due to massive debt. There is clear evidence that Monsanto's BT cotton is implicated. Physicist and author Vandana Shiva has been monitoring what's been going on in these rural farming towns. Shiva noted, quote, "The price per kilogram of cotton seeds has gone from 7 rupees to 17,000 rupees. Monsanto sells its GMO seeds on fraudulent claims of yields of 1,500 kilograms a year, when farmers harvest 300 to 400 kilograms a year on average." Unquote. Shiva and other critics have concluded that Monsanto's profit-driven policies have led to a suicide economy, quote-unquote, in India. That's the end of the item. If you listen to non-commercial alternative radio, you probably recognize Vandana Shiva's voice. We hear it a lot. But when the New York Times quotes some supposed expert on international agriculture, don't expect it to ever be Dr. Shiva. More likely, they'll quote some suit at the World Bank or the Rockefeller Foundation. And his solution will almost always be, let's have more Monsanto and less whining. Here's an item that's too recent to make Project Censored's list, though I bet it will be on it next year. I like it especially because David Rovics essentially predicted it, and we'll hear David in a minute. The article is just out from Russia Today, January 23, 2014. Its headline reads, U.S. railroad oil spills in 2013 surpassed previous four decades combined. Newly unveiled data show that in 2013, more crude oil was spilled in U.S. railway accidents than in the prior 37 years combined. 800,000 gallons spilled from U.S. railroads in the years from 1975 to 2010. That does not include Canadian spills, some of which are thought to surpass 1 million gallons spilled on their own. But last year in the U.S., railroads spilled over 1.15 million gallons of crude oil. The total was boosted by major derailments in Alabama and North Dakota. A single rail car contains about 29,000 gallons of oil. 11.5 billion gallons of oil were transported by rail across the continent in 2013. In November, in rural Alabama, nearly 30 cars of a 90-car train derailed. 12 of the cars burst into flames so hot that firefighters had to let the fire subside on its own. 750,000 gallons of oil spilled into the Alabama wetlands and drained into small tributaries that empty into the Tombigbee River. Near Castleton, North Dakota, on December 30th, authorities estimate that at least 400,000 gallons of crude oil were spilled in a train derailment. 2,400 people were forced to evacuate their homes in sub-zero temperatures. North Dakota Governor Jack Dalrymple said Tuesday that new railway safety standards are needed. Sidebar comment, and when Republican politicians start calling for more federal regulations, you know that the North Dakota crude has hit the fan. Back to the text. These data do not account for Canadian accidents last year, including the catastrophic spill in Lac-Mégantic, Quebec. On July 6, a runaway oil train derailed and exploded there, killing 47 people and devastating the small Quebec town. Sidebar comment, it also spilled 26,000 gallons of crude oil into the local waterways, according to Wikipedia. And with more on the disaster in Quebec, here's David Rovics.
There's an oil boom. The prairies are on fire, shale gas. All the fuel you might desire coming out so fast. No time to lay pipeline, Eurekaville. It's like the days of 49, except this time they're using massive rigs that poison everything more thoroughly. The deeper that it digs, trains a mile long. Load it up in rail cars, send them west, send them east. Past cafes, schools, late night bars, there's an oil train coming your town. There were dangers. They knew this from the start, but they were minimal. They said everyone must play their part and risk the destruction of their cities. Each time a train rolls by, hope it won't derail and detonate sky high. There's an accident each day somewhere, but we're not supposed to fear that it could happen here. Listen closely. Do you hear that whistle blow? Look out the window. Do you see the fire glow? There's an oil train coming through your town. It was after midnight on a Saturday night. A resident called in. That rail car was alight with that much gas. Sitting by the lake, it was no one's job to watch the car that maintained the brake on 73. Massive tanks of fracking gas down the hill, gaining speed as they rolled past. Now at the music cafe that once was on Rue Frontenac, there are 50 customers and employees who won't be coming back. There's an oil train coming through your town. There's an oil train coming through your town.
David Rovics with another news story you might have missed. That's from his new album, If I Had a Hammer, and you can learn more at davidrovics.com. That's R-O-V-I-C-S, davidrovics.com. And you can learn more about Project Censored at projectcensored.org. Let's hear a few minutes of Project Censored's movie. In this section, they talk a bit about why and how our news gets censored. I don't have the video, just the audio, but I do recognize some of the voices. Among them are Noam Chomsky, I think Dan Rather, and at the end, the late Howard Zinn. Let's have a listen.
Implicitly, we have a concentrated, top-down corporate media system that's primarily oriented to make money and provide entertainment, and is increasingly a propaganda machine for the military, media, industrial complex of the United States.
The stations used to be family-owned. Guess what? They're all gone. They're all owned by multinational corporations.
The country is run by a few big interests looking out for themselves and not for the benefit of the population.
Well, the corporate media does it by the book. They do the time-life approach. They go down the middle. They never say anything too controversial. If you try, like, to criticize Westmoreland in Vietnam, you get into a whole scandal like Dan Rather did, and you don't get away with that stuff. So as a result, they barrier everything to death, and it becomes sanitized and boring.
The way it works is, and I've been in these conversations, this is how it works on the inside. You have the responsibility for a newscast. And every morning the school board lights up. Hear the demographics from last night. Here's what you did with Network X. Here's what your competition did. By the way, they handed your head to you last night because we think they concentrated on the story most people wanted to hear. Paris Hilton, murder case on the West Coast. You insisted on leading with something, an international story. And here's what Network Y did. That's the way the pressure works on you.
Censorship is one of our most serious problems, if not the most serious problem. And I think we have to look at censorship as taking many different forms. But there's this much more subtle form of censorship, which is exercised every day by the mainstream press. Mainstream press is a good way to put it, where the owners censor it. I talked recently to a very high up reporter in one of the major US newspapers, the New York Times, and he said, you know, I'm not censored. I can write anything I want and turn it into my editor, but he decides what to publish and what not to publish. And if he doesn't publish any of my stories for a couple of weeks, I lose my job. So theoretically, I'm not censored. Nobody puts black lines through sentences. It's not the old fashioned form, but he's censored.
Fear permeates every newsroom in the country. One of the fears is that our circulation will go down, or our ratings will go down, or our demographic will go down. And I do not accept myself in this criticism. It is, listen, somebody else is running the story that I don't think ought to be the lead story. But for 10 days, they've been on a ratings climb and we've been on a ratings decline. And the reason entertainment values have reached the point where they've almost tsunami-like overwhelmed news values is this reality. If you continue to lose demographics, you continue to lose in the ratings, you probably aren't going to last.
Good evening, and welcome to CMM, the Corporate Mainstream Media News Network. I'm Hallie Burton. In today's news, Americans are breathing a sigh of relief as Congress has agreed to bail out our struggling banking industry, saving our country from a deeper recession and economic collapse. In other news, Lindsay Lohan was implicated for allegedly stealing jewelry. And Charlie Sheen, he's back in rehab.
The corporations control the world today. There was a time not so long ago, a few hundred years ago, when geopolitics of the world was controlled by religious organizations. And then it was governments. And you had some totalitarian governments, you had some democratic governments. But governments really ran things. Today it's the big corporations.
The antitrust safeguards that had been put there around back in the 30s had been completely dismantled or ignored by the courts. So we need to go back to basics and enforce our own rules. the elites have gotten to a point where they're above the rules, as we are seeing now with the economy. And that's obscured by our media, who are complicit and part of the same clique. And we need to dismantle all of that through reforms and just say, no, let's go back. The rules actually say this. We need to enforce this.
Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. This is Mickey Huff in studio with Peter Phillips. For the last segment of the show today, the last five so odd minutes we have, we'd like to call attention to a couple of guys that have been making a film about media censorship. So that's certainly right up our alley.
In 1996, Congress passed the Telecommunications Act, which led to a gold rush of media mergers and takeovers in the United States. Today, fewer than five major media corporations dominate U.S. news and information systems.
As a student of Project Censored, we discussed the spin that corporate media used when describing the Telecommunications Act of 1996. It was supposed to create competition among media corporations, ultimately benefiting the American public with increased relevant news.
You've been traveling around the country for the last 5 years now, getting this kind of footage, right? And you're putting together this story of media censorship, propaganda.
The fact that we have censorship in our media is not an occurrence that happens because of ignorance. It is something that happens because of deliberate policy.
What the corporate media do, basically, is they parrot the arguments of the administration. They don't challenge the administration, they report the administration. But in reporting them, they are giving the administration the airwaves. They're giving them the platform. They're crowding out everything else. They're not reporting the views of the opposition. And so all that the public gets is the statements of the political leaders of the country.
And with that abrupt ending, it's time to say good night, Chet. Good night, David. That's the way it is. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust for New World Notes. Thank you for listening. You'll get to my non-carborundum, and please come back again next week. Ciao.